Today's scripture reading is taken from Proverbs 13, verses 1 through 20. And I'll be reading from the New Living Translation. A wise child accepts a parent's discipline. A mocker refuses to listen to correction. Wise words will win you a good meal, but treacherous people have an appetite for violence. Those who control their tongue will have a long life. Opening your mouth can ruin everything. Lazy people want much but get little, but those who work hard will prosper. The godly hate lies. The wicked cause shame and disgrace. Godliness guards the path of the blameless, but the evil are misled by sin. Some who are poor pretend to be rich. Others who are rich pretend to be poor. The rich can pay a ransom for their lives, but the poor won't even get threatened. The life of the godly is full of light and joy, but the light of the wicked will be snuffed out. Pride leads to conflict. Those who take advice are wise. Wealth from get-rich-quick schemes quickly disappears. Wealth from hard work grows over time. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. People who despise advice are asking for trouble. Those who respect a command will succeed. The instruction of the wise is like a life-giving fountain. Those who accept it avoid the snares of death. A person with good sense is respected. A treacherous person is headed for destruction. Wise people think before they act. Fools don't, and even brag about their foolishness. An unreliable messenger stumbles into trouble, but a reliable messenger brings healing. If you ignore criticism, you will end in poverty and disgrace. If you accept correction, you will be honored. It is pleasant to see dreams come true, but fools refuse to turn from evil to attain them. Walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get in trouble. This is the word of the Lord.
So I appreciated Shara's video that she presented. One of the mission outreaches that we work with in Cochabamba is the place called Casa Amistad. And Casa Amistad is the house of friendship. And it's kind of a strange arrangement, but folk who are put in jail in Cochabamba, the children of those folk go to jail with the parents. So it's a very strange arrangement. So they are in. And Casa Amistad is a program to help, feed, teach skills, learn how to read, do math. I mean, it's all that kind of stuff, right? What you would do in school, they do there. We don't obviously have that here in Canada, but that sort of thing is going on. And a number of the kids that you saw in those slides are children who are in jail because the parents have done something or they said they did something. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's not always totally legit. People can be put in prison for various reasons down there. Some legit, some not. And anyway, so when we go down, we spend some time at Casa Amistad, and some of the monies that you give, we bring down, and we buy supplies, we buy food, we bring it all over there to Casa Amistad. And things are not cheap in Bolivia. You'd think things are cheap in Bolivia, but they're not. Food is actually quite expensive. You know, everything is expensive. So anyways, just so you know, some of those programs we'll be visiting. Then, of course, also the one out where you saw the children running in fields and so on will be a program we do outside of Cochabamba. And there we have several hundred children that we'll be working with. And so, for example, there, I think Shara mentioned one time that we do a lunch for them, and a lunch you can provide, she estimates, for around $2 American. And so a lot of the kids go there, and then part of it, they go because they know they're going to get a good meal. And the parents know that, and they send them. So it's can be as basic as that. So we are in partnership with the Bolivian churches, particularly in Cochabamba. Yvonne's church himself, very active in the area, will be speaking and engaging with them throughout the weeks. And I'll also be speaking at the graduation of the seminary, just out of interest. So that will be happening as well. So in partnership, not just here, but here and beyond. Interesting, in the baptismal tank, Pastor Edson's Brazilian church, which is part of what we do, we are very engaged with Pastor Edson. They're doing a baptism for a number of people tonight. If you go in the back room, they're using our white gowns. There's a whole bunch of them back there over the chairs that they're going to be using. So we celebrate that together. You know, we're working together in the community. So we don't necessarily see all that, but we're part of what's going on. So it's good news. Some things are seen, some things are not seen, but we are working together on that front. And then for our youth who are going away next week to Camp Kwasand, right? A number of them are going. They'll be renting a school bus to do that. I think last I heard, around 40 folks, kids, leaders. So it's a good-sized group, and that will be a good outreach and hopefully experience for them as well. So for the last few weeks, we've been looking at the book of Proverbs, obviously, and just to remind you, so chapters 1 through 9, they are a specific book. Those chapters, 9 chapters, kind of hold together on the theme of the fear of the Lord. Once we hit chapter 10 and beyond, you'll note at chapter 10 at the beginning, let's see if we got, okay, turn it on. There we go, beautiful. Chapter 10's title is the Proverbs of Solomon. All right, so it's a new unit. And here on, the Proverbs are a little bit more individual in style. So they don't necessarily hang together immediately. Obviously still Solomon's wisdom, but we have to kind of group them to kind of get what we want. So that's what we're going to do, and I've skipped through to chapter 13, and I'm looking at 5 different themes, all right? So you can kind of keep track. If you're taking notes, there will be 5 main points as we go through. And the first one is similar to last week, the value of being teachable, of having an open mind. So this was a value in sapiential teaching and wisdom, the idea of being teachable. So the wise person is teachable, the scoffer or mocker is not. And so we saw 3 verses last week in chapter 9, 7, 8, and 12. It talks about the scoffer or the mocker, depending on your translation. And then when we look at chapter 13 of Proverbs, it begins that way, same idea. We read chapter 13, verse 1, and find it. You'll hear the writer say, "A wise child loves discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke." So it's the same word picked up in chapter 13. Does not listen to critique. And then in the verses that follow, verses 10 and 13, the word scoffer and mocker are not used, but the idea is the same. So for example, in verse 10, "By insolence the heedless make strife, but wisdom is with those who take advice. You're wise if you will take advice, if you will listen." Verse 13 goes, "Those who despise the word bring destruction on themselves, but those who respect the commandment will be rewarded." So it's the same idea, but the word scoffer and mocker is not used. The issue is, will we be teachable? Will we be open? Are we able to receive from others? And that's throughout our entire lives. It's not just when we are younger and in school. The arrogant are contentious. They quarrel because they believe they know it all already. I don't know. You may know people like that. You may have people in your family extended family who are difficult. You have a conversation and they always have the right answer. You probably have some of those, right? Somewhere along the line. Can be a challenge. They believe they know best on everything. So that can be a situation. But the wise are teachable, who respect the word. And so Jesus is our model here. Jesus who listens, who hears, who engages. It's interesting, in Hebrews it talks about Christ, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. So even Jesus, as the Son of God, was willing to be teachable, to be open, and to receive. He learned obedience through what he suffered. He goes to the cross in obedience, not wanting that. Who would want that? But he goes because he's trusting in God that that is God's wise will for him. Receiving life, receive the day. Thomas Kelly has a book called A Testament of Devotion. It's considered a classic in spirituality formation. So you might look Thomas Kelly up. He was a Quaker, not a big book, thin book. Quaker, Mennonite tradition. And Kelly talks about living in the passive mood. And what he means by that is so often in our lives, you get up in the morning, and you've got a plan for the morning and for the day, and stuff starts to happen that changes your day. You go to work, you have one idea you're going to do, and something happens, and you're off to a totally different thing. Or you've got an idea, you're going to meet somebody, and they cancel. And something else happens. Doesn't that happen? Our days change all the time. Kelly says, a key for spiritual formation is, can you receive the day? Can you live, he says, in the passive mood, which means you are being acted upon. Something happens and you are being acted upon. You go to Tim Hortons and the guy in line, let's just say, is, or behind you, is being really difficult, or you're driving a car and something happens. How do you respond? Living in the passive mood. So it doesn't mean you live passively, but it means that as you go throughout, can you respond in a way, not simply react, but respond in a way where you can grow, the other person can grow, to receive the day. We're not always very good at that. One of the reasons is like we like to control the situation. I want to control that outcome, but often we can't control the outcome. So how do we receive the day when we can't control? It can be in our families. It can be in our church. It can be in your neighborhood. Interesting, what's going on, you guys, if you live in the area, you know about it. There's a possibility at the hockey arena down in the valley might be changed through MLSC into basketball courts. Now, some think that the basketball courts would be a brilliant idea for this whole area, because they'll do all kinds of programming, and it will minister to a lot of kids who play basketball. On the other side of it, we have a hockey arena, that's been there for a long, long, long time, and a lot of people in the area, their kids are in hockey. So it's either going to be a hockey arena, or it's going to be basketball courts. It's not going to be both, most likely. And we could be here this morning, and you could have very strong feelings on either side of that. I don't know. If you live in the area, you might have neighbors who their kids are in hockey, and hockey, hockey, hockey. You might be in a building on the street, on Weston Road, and the kids might want to really play basketball, so you think, well, that would be great. So the point being, how do we receive the day if it doesn't go the way you want it to go? You're committed for it being hockey, but it goes basketball. You can't control the outcome. You've done what you can. You said what you're going to say, but you cannot control it. Kelly would say, well, there's a good example. How do we receive the day? Because you can receive it in a way where you are being open, you're trusting, or you can be in a way, receive it and just be angry about the whole thing. So that's one example that's going on in our neighborhood. I don't know where it'll go. I have no idea. Receiving and living in the passive mood, being receptive, being teachable, not locked in a rut. So we saw that last week, and it carries on in Proverbs because it's an important scene. The value of honest speech. I like this quote at the bottom. Note it. Language has the power to shape behavior. So if you're a teacher, you probably believe that. Language has the power to shape behavior. Just how you speak, the words you use, can shape and mold people in a very positive way. That's what the proverbial writer is saying. So, if that's the case, we want to be very aware of our words and how that might shape others who are around us. Interesting, in ancient times, the Proverbs were spoken. They weren't read. So the teachers would speak them. Students would memorize them, listen to them. So it's the value of our speech, the power of our words, to weigh them. And that's for all of us. You, me, we got to be very aware of our language, our speech. I have to be aware of that. If you get up in front of speaking in front of people, then you got to be careful about your words. Sometimes you may not do it very well. You try. Here's examples of negative speech, gossip. And you can look through. All the Proverbs are there, right? How gossip hurts people. It's not a positive use of your speech. Lying, clearly. Even flattery. There's a lot of flattery going on in the United States because the administration responds to it. If you flatter me, then maybe I'll do something nice for you. Power of flattery. And then just simple negative power, using power in ways that are abusive, hurting. Examples of negative speech. We're called to talk in a way. And I note here, our world is really on the edge, I would suggest. We live in a day where things are on the edge. Chaos can break forth at any point. How we speak to one another in our day is critical. Because things can fall apart, as the novelist writes. Things fall apart very, very, very quickly. So we want our words to be healing, restorative, building up, and not tearing down, because you have no idea where it's going to go if it starts falling apart. So powerful, honest speech. That's what we're looking at, number two. Thirdly, the value of good work. Work, by the way, in the Old Testament and in the New Testament is seen as a good thing. So the fact that you work, we all work in different ways, that is not seen as a problem, is not seen as something that's not good. Work is, particularly if it's good work, is useful. It's useful for society. And it's part of what we're about. Even in the Old Testament, I note, Genesis 2:15 says that Adam and Eve, they tilled the garden. They kept care of the garden. They had a job. Even in perfect paradise, the garden needed tending. The creatures needed help. So work was going on. And work will go on, I believe, when we get into heaven on the other side of the pale. Work will continue. It's not just a big party, sitting on a cloud, reading magazines, hoping we brought more. You know, it's going to be work. You're going to have work. I'm going to have work. Maybe you'll get an extended holiday before the work starts. I don't know. But work is part of the mandate. It's work, rest, right? The cycle. The Jewish calendar is 6 days you work, one day you rest. That's it. Work and rest, the balanced life. So good work. If you're a student here this morning, then work is valued. We're not to be lazy. Laziness brings hard times. That's what Proverbs says. So work diligently, get your work done. It'll be good for you. So the writer says. That's the third principle. I'm going to check you at the end, okay? We're going to go through and I'm going to find out if you know the five principles or not. This is a test at the end here. Number four, the value of hopeful living. Here, there are a couple of proverbs that I quite like, and I don't know, you'll see what you think, but we are called to live in the light, not in the darkness. Note verse 9, the light of the righteous rejoices, but the lamp of the wicked goes out. The light of the righteous. Light is a symbol for life. Light, life of the righteous rejoices. We experience joy. So we hold on to that one. Verse 12, this is one of my favorites here. Note, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. That's the proverb. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. A desire fulfilled. You have a hope for something. You have some sort of project, and you are able to fulfill it. What happens? Creates achievement, creates a certain energy, confidence, satisfaction, and indeed, it's called a tree of life. Tree of life is the language from the Garden of Eden again. There was a tree. If you ate of that fruit, you had the tree of life. Life. Ongoing life. Abundant life. The tree of life. So a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. But hope deferred makes the heart sick. Which means you have a project and the whole thing falls apart and you're quite discouraged at the end. That's the idea there. Hope deferred, frustration, depression even. Is this not true? I mean, have you ever experienced this? You have something, you've been working for something for a long time, and it comes to fruition. How do you feel? But you can also work on something for a long, long time and the whole thing falls apart. Well, how do you feel about that? And we've experienced both, right? In your life, one of those things have happened, probably both at various times. So hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. So the writer says. I understand the youth use this game. Is this good? Frankie, and I've heard this from Frankie and others, Elsie, Violet. Rose of Thorns, Bud, is that true? Do you play that little game?
It is true.
Noah's not here this morning, but I know he does it, right? So what is it? Roses and thorns and buds. What's your week like? How's it been? What's your rose? Then you're supposed to say, well, my rose. My rose is what? My rose is I got to watch some good baseball. My thorn is we lost. Bummer. My point here, though, is bud. What is your bud? What is the little bit of hope you have going forward? We need hope. This fourth point is hopeful living. Not discouraged living, not depressed living, hopeful living. So then I got to ask myself, well, what is my bud? What am I looking forward to? What am I trying to achieve? What's the project? Whatever it is, what is your bud? So youth, you tell me, what's the hardest one of those three? You got roses, thorns, or buds? Elsie, what's the hardest one? Bud, there you go. Hardest one is to come up with your bud. Darcy, roses, thorns, or buds? Which one is the hardest for you? Bud, okay. One more. You got a volunteer? Leslie, what do you think? What's the hardest for you, roses, thorns, or buds?
Everyone else said buds, so I'm going to go with thorns.
Thorns. Okay, thorns are hard for you? Yeah, I get that. I don't like thorns either. Anyway, they play that game every week, all right, or regularly anyway, and it helps, obviously, communication. Kids get to know each other, a variety of issues. But roses, thorns, or buds, we can also think about that. Hopeful living, what is it? For you, for me. We want hope. We want to live in hope, some sort of energy taking us forward. And then fifthly, the value of positive friendships and colleagues. And I say this, I think this is important. On the first Sunday of each month, the youth, some of our youth get to stay in. And I would say this is important. Who are our friends? Who are those we spend time with? Verse 20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools suffers harm. So the point is, who impacts your interests, your resolutions, or your habits? It can be young people or older people. Who are you hanging out with? Because if you walk with the wise, you become more wise. If you walk with fools, probably going to trip up. What are your sources of influence? So, for example, hotheads. Again, this all comes from Proverbs. Hotheads are anger. If you spend a lot of time with angry people, that's going to impact you a certain way. Gluttons, 28:7. What are you wanting? Gluttony, that issue is not just about food. It's about whatever your source of longing is. Perverse speech, another one. What are your influences? Another quote, educators here, a cardinal principle of education, wise people stimulate the wisdom of others. Natalie, is that true? Yeah, with students? Wise people stimulate the wisdom of others. So wise people can be people you spend time with. Wise people can also be what you're reading. What are your sources of wisdom? Who are you interacting with? Think in your own life. What's helped create wisdom in your life? Bonnie was talking about her mom. Frequently our parents can be sources of wisdom, and we hear. And they've shaped our lives in a powerful way. Could be friends. Could be extended family. Could be teachers at school. Who have influenced you in a positive way? Who are your influences? I think that's an important theme. Throughout life, some people have the good fortune of having mentors, and the mentors look out for them, encourage them, and indeed really help shape one's life in a very positive way. Mentoring. I was on Arlene Huff's son's radio show recently, Tim Huff, okay? Did 5 episodes with him. Well, one of the questions that came up was, okay, what about your grandparents? How did they shape you? And that got me thinking, because I left Ireland when I was 6 months old, and I have absolutely no memory of grandparents. Grandparenting is not part of my life, from what I experienced. Zero. And for the long, I never even really thought about it. But when I was on Tim's show, I started thinking about that. What did I miss out, I'm asking myself, because I never had grandparents who poured into my life. I don't even have a conversation with them. There was nothing, absolute zero. And that wasn't uncommon. Lots of times the Irish, the English, the Scotch, they left and that was it. It was gone. You went on a boat, you never went back. Today, that wouldn't probably happen. You'd have phone calls, right? You'd talk, Zoom, we'd do something. Anyway, I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, I've missed out on that front. I would have benefited, I'm sure, if I would have had grandparents mentoring me in some way. So then you can ask yourself, okay, well, did you have other people who were older who might be poured into your life? So we can ask that for ourselves, too. How can we pour into people's lives? Whether you are grandparents officially or not, older to younger, mentoring. Wise people stimulate the wisdom of others. The problem is, as I note here, there are more fools than there are wise. So the chances are you're going to trip up with fools more than get wisdom from the wise. So that's some input from the book of Proverbs chapter 13. So here we go. I like this one too. Imagine this. To turn away from evil is an abomination to fools. So you might say, somebody's in a gang. It would be really good if you got out of the gang. But for the person in the gang, to get out of the gang may be the last thing they ever possibly want to do. It seems like totally stupid. Why would I want to get out? To turn away from evil is an abomination to fools. So how we see things is not necessarily the way other people see things, one way or the other. Walk with the wise, not the unwise. So 5 points, the value of being teachable. Be a sponge. Sponge learning. Sponges in the coral seas just continually receive nutrients all the time, 24 hours a day. They just keep soaking it in. They're sponges. The value of honest speech. What was the third one? Good work. All right. Very nice. Number three. What was number four? Hopeful living. All right. I won't pick on anybody. What was number five? Positive relationships. Yeah. So, you know what? If you had a journal, it wouldn't have hurt it to take down 5 points. Go home during the week and you think about that. Now, the burden on you is to remember those before, even after lunch, right? After lunch, it'll be hard to pick out two of those five. So all of that saying, be disciplined, stay focused, the value of self-control. There are 9 fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:23. And the last fruit of the Spirit is self-control. The fruit of the Spirit, self-control. I suggest that may be the hardest of the whole bunch. You can spend your whole life and never get a hold of self-control. So we need to pray together that God will continue to work in our lives so that we might learn to be wise, live as the wise, live directed by the Holy Spirit, radiating self-control and love and joy and peace and gentleness and goodness and kindness, patience, the whole bunch of them. A lot easier to do it when we are controlled, self-controlled. In Jesus' name, amen.